Trinadapi Suniche Na Turadiva Sahishnuna Amani Na Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Hare Nama Hare Nama Hare Nama Eva Kevalam Kalo Nastiva 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 Gatiranyata. First, let's look at what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the opening verse of chapter 9. But before that, I would ask everyone to raise their hands and repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Idang Tu Te Guyatamang Pravakshyamyanasuyave Gyanam Vigyanam Sahitam Yaj Gyatva Mokshase Shubhat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. So, among Arjuna's many qualifications, Krishna's friend, Krishna's devotee, here Krishna is pointing out Arjuna is never envious of Krishna. And that is why Krishna is going to impart to him this special knowledge. Now, the next statement is by Narada Muni to Yudhishthira in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Naitadrisha paro dharmo nirnang sad dharmam ichchatam nyaso dandasya bhuteshu manovak kaya jasya ya. Persons who want to advance in superior religion are advised to give up all envy of all other living entities, whether in relationship to the body, words, or the mind. There is no religion superior to this. So when Narada says superior religion, this indicates that there are different grades of religion. There is fifth class, fourth class, third class, second class, first class religion. It's not all one. Just as there are many makes of automobiles, they're not all the same. So there are different levels of religion. The Srimad Bhagavatam, the very second verse, it says that Srimad Bhagavatam is going to reject all kinds of cheating, materialistic religion, and is only going to deal with pure religion. And in that very same second verse of the Bhagavatam, it points out, who can understand Bhagavatam? Same thing, the person who is free from envy. And where does envy begin? We envy God. And after envy of God, we envy those things in relationship to God, which is everything, including ourselves. So here, Narada said, you want to advance in superior religion? Give up envy of all living entities, whether the body. We see this so much in this material world, in the newspapers, the headlines. So much envy of the body on the basis of the color of the skin, or words, or even the mind. And Narada is telling Yudhishthira, there's no religion superior to this, to give up envy. Then, in the opening scene of the 10th canto, Vasudev has just married Devaki. A very envious person is driving the chariot. Who's that? Kamsa. And when Kamsa hears the omen, he lets go of the reins of the horses, grabs Devaki in one hand by the hair. The other hand, he has his sword. What do you think he's going to do? But Vasudev begins to preach to him. This is what Vasudev said, many things, because it was a crucial moment. Talk about critical thinking. Vasudev had to think on the spot. What can I say to get this Rakshasa to not kill my... This is her marriage day. Well, don't talk about honeymoon. We haven't even got there yet. So Vasudev has to think, and he starts to speak to Kamsa. Somehow he's got to get him to not kill Dave. This is one of the things Vasudev says. My dear brother-in-law Kamsa, envious impious activities cause the person in the next life to take a body by which one suffers. Why should you act impiously? Considering your own welfare, you should not envy anyone, for an envious person must always fear harm from one's enemies in this life and the next. Why? Because if I act enviously towards somebody in their next life, they're going to give it back to me. That's one of the arguments why the Vedas recommend don't eat meat. According to the Vedas, if you want to eat meat once in a month, you have to kill the animal yourself in the Durga Kali temple. And there's a mantra. You say to the goat, not cow. You say to the goat, dear Mr. Goat, I am about to slit your throat and eat your flesh. In exchange, in the next life, you can slit my throat and eat me. That's the mantra. The idea is, after so many times, what am I saying? I don't want to be in this situation. So that's the rule. That's karma. If I am envious to you, if I do something to harm you, you have the right in the next life to settle the score. You get that option. So, one of the things Vasudeva is saying to Kamsa, in next life you're going to reap the result of this heinous crime. In Veda culture, woman is never to be killed. What to speak of on her marriage day, his own sister? Kamsa was about to do the most atrocious thing. But unfortunately, not only this, but all the things Vasudev said could not change Kamsa's mind. Why? Demon. Demon is like snake. What's the use of trying to give instruction to a snake? No. Finally, Vasudev said the thing that clinched the deal. When Vasudev said, okay, there may not be any children because the omen said your sister's eighth child, but there may not be any child. But I tell you what, if there are any children, not even the eighth, any children, I will bring to you, Kamsa. You can do what you want. At that point, Kamsa said, okay. And he just didn't kill Devaki on the spot. All right. Now we come to the main course of today. Please repeat after me. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. So when Shukadeva Goswami begins to instruct Maharaj Parikshit, that's in the second canto of Bhagavatam. At the end of the first canto, Shukadeva appears at the scene when Parikshit has been informed. He gets the pink slip, 7 days to live. And that's the closing scene of Canto 1. And just at the end, Shukadev arrives and it's decided, yes, for 7 days, Parikshit will question Shukadev and he will give the definitive answer. So Shukadev's teachings begin in the second canto. After a preliminary discussion, Parikshit asks this very important question. Yad adatu mato brahman deha rambosya datu bi yad richchaya hetu nava bhavanto janate yata. O learned Brahman, the transcendental spirit soul is different from the material body. Where do you learn that? Second chapter of what? Bhagavad Gita. Everyone should know that much. That's the first thing you should learn from Bhagavad Gita. So, Parikshit is saying, he knows this. I know the soul is different from the material body. The soul is transcendental. But his question is, does one acquire the body accidentally or by some cause? That's an intelligent question. I'm spirit soul, I'm transcendental. How did I get this body? Will you kindly explain this to me, for it is known to you? The guru is supposed to have the knowledge to dispel all of the disciples' questions. That's one of the qualifications of a guru. Guru means heavy, and it doesn't mean like me, overweight. That's not the guru. Oh, my guru is good. He's 800 pounds. No. Guru is heavy in knowledge and realization. Not just knowledge. Because nowadays you could go to Google, Wiki, whatever. The internet's got all... No. He also has to have realization, practical application, because spiritual life means how do I apply all of this? How does this make sense to me? How do I actually use it? For instance, a doctor spends years and years and years studying, practicing, training, and then he finally starts to administer operations or whatever. And by actually doing it, now he has scientific knowledge, no longer theoretical. So a real spiritual master has practical, realized knowledge. It's called vigyan. Everyone say. So, Parikshit's question, which appears in second canto, How did we acquire the material body to begin with? All right, so now the answer comes. So that was asked in the 8th chapter, because the entire 8th chapter of Canto 2 is a series of questions. Prick says, I want to know this, I want to know... So verse after verse, he practically sets up the whole scheme of what Shukadev is going to explain in the rest of the 11, 12 cantos. So in this 8th chapter, he gives the whole list. I want to know this, 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 this. So in the next chapter, he begins to answer in chapter 9. Chapter 9 of Canto 2 is a very special chapter. In this 9th chapter of the 2nd canto, we see where the Vedas actually originally come from. Not China, thank God. We see how the first created being, Brahma, receives the Vedic knowledge directly from God. Everyone say, Narayan. Narayan appears to him and speaks him 4 special verses. They're called the nutshell or seed verses of the entire Bhagavatam. Our Bhagavatam that we read is 18,000 verses, all springing from the 4 original verses Narayan spoke to Brahma. Prabhupada says, in the heavenly planets, their Bhagavatam is bigger. More verses. We can only handle 18,000. That's enough. Brahma only needs 4. Because he is the most intelligent person in the whole universe. That's why he's Lord Brahma. As we say, the smartest guy in the room. There may be an assembly. There may be a discussion. Everybody's got an opinion. But usually there's one person who's the smartest in the group. That's the person you want to get the info from. Brahma's gotten his post because he is the most intelligent person. So that's explained in chapter 9, the 4 nutshell verses. In Bhagavad Gita, the 4 nutshell verses are in chapter 10. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, like starting from there. 10th chapter, verses 8 through 8, 9, 10, 11. Thank you. These are the 4 nutshell verses of Gita. So, Parikshit's question was, how did the spirit soul acquire a material body in the first place? Shukadev's answer and Prabhupada's purport will settle all accounts. Are you ready to hear? If you are, say, Hari Bol. Can I take a glass of water? Shri Shuka Uvacha Atma Mayam Rate Rajan Parasyanu Bhavatmanaha Nagate Tarata Sambandha Swapna Drastur Ivanjasa. Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, unless one is influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no meaning to the relationship of the pure soul in pure consciousness with the material body. That relationship is just like a dreamer seeing his or her own body working. That's why the word swapna was used. For instance, last night I had a fantastic dream. What was I dreaming? I was in some foreign land. And in the dream, I'm in a beautiful temple. It's 4:25 in the morning, Mangalarti time. Little by little, devotees enter the temple room. The conch shell blows. The temple room now is full with devotees. Some devotees start to sing the prayers to the spiritual master on the harmonium. And the congregation is responding, and I'm thinking, oh, this is so nice. Then I wake up. Oh, it was just a dream. It was a fantastic dream, but oh, it was just a dream. Just like sometimes we have the other kinds of dream. Somebody is chasing you. The IRS is knocking at your door. Right? A tiger is, and then in the dream, it feels very real, doesn't it? And your wife may be sleeping next to you, and you're crying, save me, save me, and you wake up. Oh, it was just a dream. Oh. And you're actually sweating, and your wife is laughing. Ah, oh, you're such nonsense. But while you're having the dream, it's very real, isn't it? So now, this verse, Prabhupada's purport, is brilliant. For me, this is one of Prabhupada's top 10 purports. Srila Prabhupada ki. What should I say before drinking water? Rasoham apsu kaunteya. What does that mean? You're the taste of water? Oh, Krishna's the taste of water. Jai, thank you for bringing this delicious taste of Krishna. All right, let's look at Prabhupada's purport. Maharaj Parikshit's question as to how a living entity began his or her material life. Notice Prabhupada said, began. That means there was a point in time when you didn't have a material life. Did that mean you didn't exist? No. But you are material. Just like there was a time when I didn't have the dream. Right? The dream started, the dream ended. Same way. When the living entity began his or her material life, although he or she is apart from the material body and mind. The soul is apart from the material body and mind. Shukadev perfectly answers, Prabhupada says. The spirit soul is distinct from the material conception of his or her life. But he or she is absorbed in such a material conception because of being influenced by the external energy of the Lord, called Atma Maya. Did you catch that? Alright? The spirit soul is distinct from the material conception, but we are absorbed in that. Why? Krishna's external energy. I know there are many questions. Prabhupada knows what you're going to be asking. Stay with it. This has already been explained in the first canto, in connection with Vyasadeva's realization of the Supreme Lord and his external energy, what Prabhupada's referring to, when Vyasadeva sat down to meditate, he saw Krishna and he saw the material energy separate. He saw them both distinct from each other. That was Vyasadeva's realization. The external energy is controlled by the Lord. Where is that stated in Bhagavad Gita? Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kaunteya jagat vipari vartate. Krishna says this material energy is working under my thumb, my direction. So Prabhupada is hinting at that. The external energy is controlled by the Lord, and the living entities are controlled by the external energy, by the will of the Lord. So somebody is thinking, well, this Lord is kind of vindictive, isn't he? Why is he doing that? Prabhupada's going to answer that. Therefore, although the living entity is purely conscious in his or her pure state, he or she is subordinate to the will of the Lord in being influenced by the external energy of the Lord. That's why we can never become equal to or greater than God. He's always in control. You may not like it, tough. That's his position. You don't become equal or independent. You're always going to be under the will of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, the same thing is confirmed. The Lord is present within the... where? The foot? The heart of every living entity, and all of the living entity's consciousness and forgetfulness are influenced by the Lord, right? Matak smitir gyanam apohanang cha. We're not independent. If Krishna causes us to forget, that's it. Yes, 15th chapter. Only when Krishna allows you, then you understand. And only when Krishna blesses you, can you remember where you left your keys. It's up to Krishna. Now, so that's the first paragraph. Prabhupada is first saying, we are in this material consciousness of life. Why? We're influenced by the material external energy, by the will of the Lord. So now someone may be thinking, boy, that means he's pretty mean. Krishna is mean. I don't like Krishna. Why is he doing that? Prabhupada answers. Now the next question automatically made will be, why does the Lord influence the living entity to such consciousness and forgetfulness? Why? The answer is, the Lord clearly wishes that every living entity be in his or her pure consciousness as part and parcel of the Lord, and thus be engaged in the loving service of the Lord as he or she is constitutionally made. So that's pure consciousness. Pure consciousness is, I am Krishna's eternal servant. Any other consciousness is false ego. So pure consciousness is, I am Krishna's eternal servant. If I reject that, I'm no longer in pure consciousness. For instance, I'll give you practical. The wife's pure consciousness is to be submissive to the husband. Am I right, husband? Right? Or do you want your wives to be doing whatever they want? I'm asking you, husbands. You're in front of your wives, so you better say the right thing. Or I ask the women, should the husband be under your control? Yes or no? No? You don't want them? So you don't care what they do? I don't believe you. I do not believe you. No, control. You don't want them to do what you say? Oh, what, you give sometimes bad instructions? I don't believe you. You ask my wife. No wife wants... huh? I am sure you do not instruct your husband anything bad. You ever give him bad instruction? Thank you. Therefore, when you give him good instruction, which is all the time, and the man, hey, why do you think he got married? Anything? That's bad proposition. I know a lot of bad men. The best kind of marriage is when the husband submits to the wife and the wife submits to the husband. Thank you. And what about the man? He can do it, so he doesn't have to. No. I don't think so. Anyway. No, that's another lecture. That's a different lecture. Anyway, at least in terms of Krishna, we should be surrendered and obedient to Krishna, yes or no? Any doubt on that? Yes? Well, then I'd really have to get out of here. So, the Lord clearly wishes that every living entity be in his pure consciousness as part and parcel of the Lord, and thus be engaged in the loving service of the Lord as he or she is constitutionally made. But because the living entity is partially independent, he or she may not be willing to serve the Lord. So we have minute independence. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, what does Krishna say? Does he force Arjuna? He says to Arjuna, I've told you everything. Now, do you see Krishna twisting Arjuna's arm? Do it. No? Do you see Krishna putting Arjuna in a headlock? Beating him? No. Krishna says to Arjuna, I've told you everything. You decide. Like that. The living entity is partially independent, and he or she may not be willing to serve the Lord, but may try to become as independent as the Lord. In the very first verse of Bhagavatam, there is a word, Swarat. Krishna is Swarat, completely, absolutely independent. Not us. We are minutely independent. Krishna can do anything and everything. We can't lift Govardhan Hill. This afternoon, we heard that when Jarasandha attacked Krishna for the 18th time, Krishna and Balaram went to the top of a mountain, 88 miles, and jumped off. And then Balaram went to marry his wife, and Krishna went to Dwarka because he knew he was about to get a letter from Rukmini. Can you jump off a mountain 88 miles and live to tell? No. So our independence, free will, is very minute, but it's still there. It's still there. One may try to become as independent of the Lord. All the non-devotee living entities are desirous of becoming equally as powerful of the Lord, although they are not fit to become so. The living entities are illusioned by the will of the Lord because they wanted to become like him. Because again, pure consciousness is, my Lord, I am subordinate to you. That's the living entity's pure consciousness. But we have free will, and we may say, no, I don't want to. So, what is Prabhupada saying here? The living entities are illusioned by the will of the Lord because they wanted to become like him. Like a person who thinks of becoming a king without possessing the necessary qualification. When the living entity desires to become the Lord, he or she is put into a condition of dreaming that he or she is a king. So that's what happens. We are supposed to be servant of God, but because of misuse of free will, we say, no, I don't want to serve God. Therefore, Krishna puts us in a condition of dreaming, thinking, I am this, I am that. All these different dreamlike states. Therefore, the first sinful will of the living entity is to become the Lord. There is the original sin. I want to be God. That's the original sin. I don't want to be servant of God. I want to be the God. What does it mean to be the Lord? What does it mean to be God? I want to be the enjoyer, not the servant. I want to be the proprietor, not the servant. And I want everyone to chant my name. I want everyone to worship me. I want to be the center of attention. I want to be God. But as Prabhupada said, yeah, but you don't have the qualifications. But I want it anyway. Therefore, a dreaming condition. The first sinful will of the living entity is to become the Lord. And the consequent will of the Lord is that the living entity forgets his or her factual life. What's the living entity's factual life? Servant of Krishna. So the living entity forgets his factual life and thus dreams of the land of utopia where he or she may become one like the Lord. Therefore, what is utopia? Placentia, Beverly Hills, Swarga, anywhere you want to go in the material world, it's the land of utopia where you can think, now I am supreme. Prabhupada gives an example. The child cries to have the moon from the mother. And the mother gives the child a mirror to satisfy the crying and disturbing child with the reflection of the moon. Right? You can't give the child the moon. How can you do that? So the mirror, I have the moon. No, he's got a reflection, but it pacifies. So Krishna gives us a perverted reflection called the material world. First verse of chapter 15 of Bhagavad Gita. Right. This material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. Similarly, the crying child of the Lord is given over to the reflection, the material world, to lord it over as karmi. And then to give this up in frustration to become one with the Lord. What happens is, I first try to enjoy the material world, then I say, no, not good enough. I want to become one with God. Merge. Moksha. I want to become one with God. Both of these stages are dreaming illusions only. Now this next sentence answers another question. Prabhupada knows you're thinking. There is no necessity of tracing out the history of when the living entity desired this. Because that's the next obvious question. Wait a second. So, this whole material existence, when did it start? Prabhupada said, don't waste your time. But the fact is, that as soon as one desired it, one was put under the control of Atma Maya by the direction of the Lord. Therefore, the living entity, in his or her material condition, is dreaming falsely that this is mine and this is I. The dream is that the conditioned soul thinks of his or her material body as I, or falsely thinks that he is the Lord and that everything in connection with the material body is mine. Thus, only in dream does the misconception of I and mine persist life after life. This continues life after life as long as the living entity is not purely conscious of his or her identity as the subordinate part and parcel of the Lord. Subordinate. That is our constitutional position. We're subordinate to Krishna. You may not like it, and obviously in the material world, most people don't like it, because look around you, how many people came tonight? Everybody else is where? Doing so many things. Why? Because they don't want to think of themselves as subordinate to the Lord. That's like when I used to work a job and they gave me some stationery and they said, what title do you want on your stationery? So everybody else was putting secretary this, VP of this. I said, oh, I know exactly. Servant. That's my position. I knew there was nothing. No. I have this job. I'm simply a servant. No illusions of grandeur that I'm some VP of nonsense. No, I'm simply a servant. What is my name? Nirantara Das. Prabhupada gave all his disciples Das or Dasi. And sometimes he would point out, give somebody a very nice name. Remember, you're not Krishna. You are Krishna Das. Big difference. Big difference. In one's pure consciousness, however, there is no such misconceived dream. And in that pure conscious state, the living entity does not forget that he or she is never the Lord, but that he or she is eternally the servitor of the Lord in transcendental love. Look at Radharani. Does Radharani ever think, I'm God, I'm supreme? What is Radharani's consciousness? I simply want to serve and please Krishna. If you read the final chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya is giving the explanation of Shikshastakam, the final Shikshastakam verse is no longer Lord Chaitanya speaking, it's Radharani herself. She gives the purport of the 8th shloka. And we see in that section, Radharani says, if Krishna wants another gopi, I go to that gopi's house, take her by the hand, and bring her to Krishna. That means Radharani does not see herself as the enjoyer, otherwise she wouldn't do that. Radharani says that if there's something I like, but Krishna doesn't like it, I hate that thing. And if there's something that Krishna likes, and I don't like it, that's my favorite thing. Her whole mind is simply what is pleasing to Krishna at her own expense. She only is thinking, how can I please and serve Krishna? That is pure, pure consciousness. And I should be thinking, you should be thinking, I simply want to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the Prabhupada said 100 times down of Krishna, who is the maintainer of the gopis. In one's pure consciousness, there is no such misconceived dream. And in that pure consciousness, the living entity never forgets that he or she is never the Lord, but that one is eternally the servant of the Lord in transcendental love. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. I hope that was transcendentally pleasing to you. Thank you very much. I think this is the first time I've given a lecture on this verse. Thank you for this opportunity.